Hello, this is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, February 18th, 2020. And we'll start with the front page of the commercial news. Our first story is entitled Rezoning Plan on Council Agenda, and this is by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. Danville City Council members will act tonight on a rezoning petition that received a split vote earlier this month from the Danville Area Planning and Zoning Commission. Council members will consider a request from Robert Brennan and his Route 1 store and lock to rezone the property at 15952 Potter's Woods Road from AG Agriculture zoning to B2 Highway Business zoning to allow for automobile sales and continuation of current use. The Zoning Commission voted 3-3, with one commissioner absent, on the rezoning. Commissioners voting against it had concerns about the rezoning conflicting with the city's long-range comprehensive land use plan and existing zoning of adjacent parcels and the potential for spot zoning. The city's Public Works Department also has recommended denial of the rezoning. The property, north of the city, is within the city's 1.5-mile zoning jurisdiction. As per a site plan and overview on the request, the parcel has been used as a self-storage facility for almost 30 years. Approximately 500 by 500 feet of the property would be used for automotive sales. Hours of operation for the automobile sales would be from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. On-site parking will be provided in the same area parking spots that are set for the storage facility. In other business tonight, the council will hear a presentation from Green Growth Group Incorporated. It is seeking special use permit to allow for indoor craft cannabis cultivation in the I-2 General Industrial Zoning District at warehouse space at 202 and 204 Eastgate Drive. The Zoning Commission will consider the request at its March 5th meeting prior to the permit request going to the City Council for action. Green Growth will share information on their proposed project through a PowerPoint presentation, according to Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. Williams also said he didn't have any update on the cannabis dispensary also planned off Lynch Road. Last year, Sabrina Noah, Senior Vice President of Public Affairs with Cresco Labs, owner of Phoenix Farms of Illinois, said the Sunnyside dispensary could open in the former Big Boy restaurant by the first quarter of 2020. According to an Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation press release from last week, the IDFPR recently concluded its first round for new applicants, including social equity applicants who had the opportunity to apply for an additional 75 adult-use cannabis licenses. Social equity applicants are eligible for additional points on their application and for technical assistance, low-interest loans, and fee reductions. Those licenses will be granted beginning May 1st. The IDFPR last week approved two more existing medical cannabis dispensaries in Addison and Rolling Meadows, opening an adult-use dispensary at the same site as their medical dispensary. Under the law, existing medical cannabis dispensaries also are permitted to open a second site for adult-use sales at a different location. In other business, council members will hear the 2020 Martin Luther King Scholarship recipient Grace Awadeya's essay. Consider authorizing a budget amendment in the Office of Grant and Planning Management for a Planner 1 position. Also consider increasing parking violation ticket fees from $5 to $10 if paid within 3 days of issuance of the ticket, $10 to $25 if paid after 3 days but before 10, $25 to $35 if paid about after 10 days but before 30 days, $10 to $25 for subsequent ticket issues on the same violation day if paid within 3 days, and $25 to $35 if paid after 3 days but before 30 days. According to information given to aldermen about other municipalities, normal charges can be $20 for time limit violations and $30 for most other parking violations. Galesburg has mostly $30 fees. Ottawa has $25 fees with exceptions, such as $75 for parking with an expired registration and $250 for handicapped parking violations. And Carbondale has parking violation fees ranging from $7 to $250. We have a staff report entitled Demolition Underway for Carl Project. Robinson Street to close this week for work. And this is just a staff report. And Dateline is Danville. City officials will close Robinson Street beginning Wednesday due to demolition underway for the Carl Medical Project. The street will be closed, weather permitting, from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. between Lafayette and Harrison Streets. The work is scheduled to be complete by Friday. The demolition of buildings is in preparation for the start of construction of Carl's $70 million complex. The closure will affect motorists traveling both northbound and southbound on Robinson. City officials advise drivers to choose an alternate route to avoid delays. There will be a high volume of construction traffic between 7 a.m. and 6 p.m. Motorists and pedestrians are urged to use caution while traveling near the work zone and be attentive to the changes in traffic control, according to a city release. For any information, contact Tracy Kraft, Program Compliance Coordinator, at 217-431-2271. And our final front page story today in the commercial news is entitled Illinois Virus Patients Let Out of Isolation. And this is by Jerry Nowicki for Capital News Illinois. Springfield. Two Chicago area residents who tested positive for novel coronavirus earlier this year have recovered and were released from home isolation this weekend, according to public health officials. Federal, state, and local health officials made the announcement in a news release Saturday, noting that the risk to the general public remains low and the two patients caused no further spread of the virus. Based on what is currently known about the virus, and after close consultation with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Illinois Department of Public Health, we believe both patients can now safely return to their regular activities, including work, without restrictions, Dr. Allison Arwadi, Chicago Department of Public Health Commissioner, said in a news release. Arwadi added the patients have had multiple rounds of negative testing for the virus and are clinically well. They do not need to wear masks and neither does anyone interacting with them. They have been cleared, she said. The two patients, our husband and wife, and the woman in her 60s, had recently returned from Wuhan, China, where the spread of the virus began. Health officials said at an earlier news conference that the spread of the virus to her husband was not totally unexpected due to the couple's close proximity. The couple was hospitalized at Amida St. Alexius Medical Center in suburban Hoffman Estates in January and released to home isolation on February 7th. Public health officials did not release other identifying information due to privacy concerns. According to the news release, public health officials worked to monitor individuals who were in contact with either of the two patients who tested positive. A CDC team was also deployed to the state, which became one of the first that can test for the virus without shipping specimens out of state. According to a situation report from the World Health Organization dated February 16th, there have been 51,857 cases confirmed globally, but just 683 of those came from outside of China. The virus has resulted in 1,666 deaths, with three of them outside of China. In the U.S., there have been 15 positive cases, while 60 tests are pending, according to the CDC. In Illinois, there have been just two positive tests, both in the patients that are now cured, and 48 negative tests. Two more tests were awaiting results Monday, according to IDPH. Symptoms for the virus include mild to severe respiratory illness with fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. IDPH officials said the test it can administer is intended for people who meet certain criteria, which include having traveled to China and other exposure history, as well as exhibiting the stated symptoms. Authorities believe symptoms appear between 2 and 14 days after exposure, and there is not a significant risk of a person transmitting the virus before they develop symptoms. Public health officials urge the same protections one takes against the common flu: covering coughs and sneezes, washing hands with warm soap and water, and staying home when sick. The Illinois Department of Public Health maintains a novel coronavirus hotline at 1-800-889-3931 and can be reached via email at dph.sick@illinois.gov. Chicago residents can reach CDPH by calling 311, and the Cook County Department of Public Health can be reached at 708-633-4000. Coronavirus is a large family of viruses, with some causing illness in people and others circulating among animals, according to IDPH. The virus is named for the crown-like spikes on its surface. Human coronaviruses are common throughout the world and usually cause mild to moderate illness in people, according to IDPH. The concern over the recent outbreak of the 2019 novel coronavirus comes from the fact that it is a new, unrecognized strain. Previous novel coronavirus strains, such as the ones that caused MERS, or Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, and SARS, or Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome, evolved from animal strains and have been associated with more severe respiratory illness, according to IDPH. There is currently no vaccine to prevent the 2019 novel coronavirus. However, the news release noted there are no additional precautions recommended for the general public to take in the U.S. because the virus has not been spreading widely here. And now we'll turn to the obituaries for Tuesday, February 18th. The first we have is for Martha Rose Burleson. Martha Rose Saltz Burleson, 79, of Covington, Indiana, passed away at 3:57 a.m. Saturday, February 15th, 2020. A visitation will be held at Grady Funeral Home in West Lebanon on Monday, February 17th, 2020, from 11 a.m. until the service time at 1 p.m., with Reverend Charles B. Anderson officiating. Interment will follow at West Lebanon Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. F. J. Foster. Franklin J. Foster, 77, of Danville and formerly of Gibson City, passed away at 8:30 a.m. February 12, 2020, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center. A celebration of life will take place at 10 a.m. Saturday, February 22, 2020, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville, with John Leonard officiating. Visitation will be Friday, February 21, from 4 to 6 p.m. at the funeral home. Memorial contributions may be made to OSF Sacred Heart Cancer Center at 812 North Logan Avenue, Danville, Illinois, 61832. Paula Stump. Paula J. Stump, 66, of Danville, died at 5:15 a.m. Wednesday, February 12, 2020, at Garden View Manor in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Port Vet Funeral Services, 3 South Hodge Street in Tilton. Rosemary Curtis. Rosemary Curtis, 91, of Danville, died at 11:33 a.m. Saturday, February 15, 2020, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Kruger Cone Pape Funeral Home and Crematory, 10 East Williams Street in Danville. Mark Andrew Lockhart. Mark Andrew Lockhart, 73, of Wellington, passed away at 12:45 p.m. Friday, February 14, 2020, at his home. Per his wishes, cremation rites have been accorded. A graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, February 21, 2020, at Floral Hill Cemetery in Hupston, with Pastor Robert Puir officiating. Memorials may be made to the Wellington United Methodist Church. And that's all we have for today for the obituaries. We're going to go to the News Gazette for a quick article from Vermilion County entitled Danville Man Faces Gun Charges by Tim Dittman. Danville. A Danville man is facing multiple weapons charges in a Valentine's Day shooting in that city. Police Commander Josh Webb said officers received a call of shots fired about 8:30 p.m. Friday in the area of Griffin and Cleveland Streets, where they stopped a pickup truck leaving the scene. After finding a handgun in the truck, police arrested one of its occupants, Dakota Patton, 23, of Danville, on charges of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon, possession of a stolen firearm, and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. The Vermilion County State's Attorney could not immediately be reached for information on formal charges. Police did not release other information on the incident, but said the investigation continues. Anyone with information is asked to call them at 217-431-2250, or if wishing to remain anonymous, Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-8477. And also from the News Gazette, we have the Rediscover Danville column by Carol Nichols, and this week is entitled A Special Woman Remembered. When I heard the news of Vermilion Advantage President and CEO Vicki Haugen's death, I knew she would be the subject of my column this week, but it has been difficult to write. Many people who worked with Vicki in her role as the Chief Economic Development Officer in the Danville area have commented on her many wonderful accomplishments and her abilities. She worked tirelessly to attract and retain Vermilion County employers. She devoted her life to the goal of making our area better for those who live here, and the work she did will bear fruit long after we all have joined her again. I first met Vicki Taylor in fourth grade at Cannon School. Through time, we began to slur the number of years ago that it was, but it was over 50. One of my favorite movies is Sabrina, with Harrison Ford, or Humphrey Bogart, depending on the version you watch. While Vicki always had the look and grace of the Audrey Hepburn character, I am reminded of a different character in the show. In one scene, longtime employees are discussing what their high-powered boss, Linus Larrabee, was like when he was 12 years old. The answer was shorter. Even in grade school, Vicki was beautiful, perfectly dressed, smart, and tough on the outside, but I always suspected sensitive on the inside. She had perfect posture, was soft-spoken, and always polite. Parents loved her. Boys were fascinated with her. Girls were a little intimidated, and probably jealous. She graduated a year early from Danville High School, and while there, she worked in the Office Occupations Program as a secretary at a law office in Danville. It was the 1970s. That was what women did then. But it didn't take her long to move into a key position in the newly formed Economic Development Corporation that became synonymous with her name. For most of our careers, we worked down the street from one another, and we often served on the same committees and boards. When I was a newspaper publisher, we sometimes clashed over when or how information was presented to the public. Vicky was protective of her projects in the way a mother is of her children, and wanted to be sure they would not be jeopardized. When projects were ultimately announced, the principals always credited Vicky with the work she did to make them happen. Vicky had a small staff, but knew the secret of good management. She was able to see the big picture and introduce ideas to various key players in a way that inspired them to take their piece of the project and to run with it. The types of projects she worked on required coordination between the company involved, real estate developers, politicians, bureaucrats, educators, utility managers, unions, investors, media, and sometimes individuals. I'm sure it must have been like herding cats, but she was able to do it successfully, sometimes with a velvet glove and sometimes with an iron fist. I have a great deal of respect for Vicky, and never more so than in the past few years when she fought cancer in the same way she fought in her career, with grace, intelligence, and persistence. I doubt if there ever has been someone as committed to growth in the Danville area as she was. She devoted her life to that goal and saw both wins and losses over the years. She celebrated the victories and agonized over the defeats. I will miss her. And from the sports section today in the commercial news, we have this story entitled Local Wrestlers Make It All the Way to State. This is by Marvin Holman. Local wrestlers at Stanford, Olympia, and Muskuta battled for a berth in next week's IHSA wrestling tournament. In the end, three wrestlers from Oakwood Salt Fork, two from Westville Georgetown Ridge Farm, and one each from Danville and Hupston area will head to the State Farm Center. The Comets' top winners were in the lower weight classes, with Reef Pacott at 106 pounds and Gage Reed at 113 taking first place in their classes, while Joe Lachouet took fourth at 132 pounds. It is great to have that 1-2 punch in the tournament, and those two have worked hard, OSF head coach Mike Glosser said. With Joe, he finished short last year, so it was great to see him find a way to make it this year. For Reed, it will be his second straight state meet, while Pactot and Lachouet each will be going to Champaign for the second time. It's the first time for them, but they are battle-tested, Glosser said. They have had big youth tournaments, and while they are not the same, it is still a major experience. Also, Gage will be there to help as well. This was a major win for not only them, but for the whole team that have been working hard in training with them. I also have to thank my assistant coaches, Bryce Ivy and Kylie Bott, for also helping out. Junior Hayden Kopus won at 285 for WGRF and is undefeated at 22-0, going into his third straight state tournament. Joining him is teammate Riley Edwards, who was fourth at 182. Hupston area's Abel Kalunga beat out the best at 182. The sophomore went to 41-7 after pinning Ridgeview's Evan Antonio in 2 minutes 33 seconds. And in Class 2A, Damarian Moore took fourth at 113 for Danville, going to the semifinals before settling to making the third place match, where he lost by injury default. And we have from Ask Annie today a couple of letters. The headline is Introverted Boyfriend Doesn't Want to Go Out for Anything. Dear Annie, I have been seeing this guy for about 8 months now and don't know how to explain what the situation is. He always comes to my house and we watch TV and do a lot of talking. I feel like I have known him my whole life and am so comfortable with him. My problem is that we never go out or do anything together. I have asked him if he is embarrassed to be seen in public with me, and all he says emphatically is no, and then he changes the subject. I truly think I'm going crazy. What do I do? Signed, Homebound. Dear Homebound, don't end it, just change it. If you want to go out on a date, then go out on a date. The next time he says he is going to come over to watch TV, tell him you will meet him at a local restaurant or movie theater to have a night out. It is important to communicate to your partner what is important to you. If it's a nice night on the town, then insist on it. You are certainly entitled to one. If he refuses, then yes, it is time to look for a new partner. Dear Annie, I'd like to share my observations about married couples who approach social gatherings with different perspectives. It is not unusual if the husband is an introvert and the wife an extrovert, or vice versa. There are some interesting books written about these personality differences. I found out that I was an introvert and started to feel more comfortable about why I felt that way. Extroverts like to be out and about on a regular basis. Introverts prefer to be out and about for a limited period of time, and then they are ready to go home and just be. So then you have a human doing versus a human being. I find being around people constantly very tiring, but an extrovert finds it invigorating. Thanks for your column. Signed, an introvert married to an extrovert. Dear introvert married to an extrovert, thanks for highlighting these key differences. It is always important to know what makes you feel good and what makes your partner feel good. Dear Annie, this is in response to frustrated friend and others who have hearing loss or are coping with friends' hearing loss. Check out Caption Call. It's a free service that provides a telephone with a monitor. I have it. Everything the other party says comes up on the monitor, and I can read it. The caller ID is terrific. I've worn hearing aids for years, and I know I am losing tones. Most calls are clear for me, but if it concerns business, an appointment, or something important, I can save the call and review it. To obtain Caption Call, first check with your hearing specialist and see if he or she recommends it. Your specialist will sign a certification to submit with your request. Caption Call will contact you to make an appointment, come to your house with the phone, and install it. If you have problems, call the service number to schedule something quickly. Signed, Clear as a Bell. Dear Clear as a Bell, hearing loss can make even the easiest, simplest tasks more taxing. This service sounds like a no-brainer for ease and peace of mind. Thanks for suggesting it. And finally, from the Community Briefs section in Danville, we have a cookie session. Make George Washington and Abraham Lincoln vanilla wafers at the Danville Public Library's Kids Snack Club at 3:30 p.m. today in the Children's Program Room. For children ages 5 to 18, children under 12 with a caregiver. And the Middle Fork Audubon Society will meet at 7 p.m. February 27th in the Danville Public Library. Lee Salter and her husband, Lee, will share photos and stories about their recent trip to Australia. And that takes us to the end of our time for today, Tuesday, February 18th, 2020. This has been the Vermilion County News. Again, my name is Greg, and as always, it's been a pleasure to read for you. I hope you have a great day. Take care.